Welcome to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, April 9th. How are we doing this morning? Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers. It's better under the umbrella. Happy Easter to you. Happy Passover. Hope you're having a wonderful morning so far. And love that Masters music. What a special time of year it is. And what a week it's been. Really, this Masters Sunday, what a most compelling leaderboard, full of irony and intrigue as third round play was suspended yesterday at 3:15 in the afternoon due to inclement weather conditions from all the rain. And third round play will resume this morning at 8:30. The final round is supposed to start at 12:30, with twosomes starting off on both holes 1 and 10. So they're trying to get this in today for sure. And talk about interesting storylines. Well, okay, let's start. LIV golfer Brooks Koepka, who really looked on the edge last season, showing a very depressed and frustrated side of him on the Netflix Full Swing series. He's at 13 under. He remains at the top of the leaderboard, four shots ahead of Jon Rahm. And actually, when third round play resumes at 8:30 this morning, Brooks, he's one under through six holes. He will face an 11-footer on the seventh green to save par. Jon Rahm is plus one through six. He has a 9-footer for birdie. And depending on what goes on in that hole, it could be a two-shot swing. So that's obviously the main storyline. But there are just so many different storylines, one being Rory McIlroy, who really became the face of the PGA Tour and all the divisiveness that's been going on. He did not make the cut. He just never looked comfortable in what it was his ninth attempt at a career Grand Slam. And he had rounds of even par 72 on Thursday. It was plus 5, 77 in the second round. And with a plus 5 overall, he is home. He really has to be extremely disappointed. Phil Mickelson, who has really played poorly in the LIV events. And he's been very low-key, kind of looking very thin. He lost about 25 pounds, he said. His play has been sharp this week. He shot a 1-under-71 in round one. He's a 3-under-69 in round two. Three-time Masters champion Phil Mickelson. He's tied for eighth at 4-under, but he has to be very pleased with how he's been playing all week. He is he's through nine holes already in the third round. Now, another great story, amateur Sam Bennett. He finds himself in third place. He's seven shots back, but what an impressive game he has displayed all week. And he's a great story, really a great story. Let's first start with he shot back-to-back 4-under-68s in the first and second rounds. In the third round, he's at plus two through six holes. So, and we were just seeing, you know, under a lot of pressure and with these really crazy, windy, wet conditions, he's really been very impressive. He's 23 years old from Madisonville, Texas. He won the U.S. Amateur in New Jersey at Ridgewood Country Club last summer. And he lost his dad to Alzheimer's in 2021 and got a tattoo on his wrist that reads, "Don't wait to do something." I was talking to Richard Neer about this yesterday morning, and it was the last note he received from his father before his father passed away. And he said he looks at his wrist every time he holds the club, and there's that message. So it really helps him focus. He's very inspired to do well. He's been so composed, and what a ball striker that young man is. So he's been a real joy to watch this week. Tiger Woods makes the cut, barely, thanks to his good friend Justin Thomas, whose bogey-bogey finish moved the cut line to plus three, allowing Tiger to get in. JT, at plus four, does not make the cut. So what a good story. Tiger is still playing this weekend, 23rd straight cut, tying the record shared by Freddie Couples and Gary Player. But boy, yesterday's driving rainstorm and the cold temperatures did not serve Tiger well. He started around 3 on the 10th yesterday. He bogeyed 10, 14. He doubled 15 and 16. It was the first time in his career here at the Masters that Tiger made back-to-back double bogeys. So We'll see how he fares the rest of the weekend. He's at plus six through seven holes, plus nine overall. But hey, he made the cut. He's hanging in. And you have to hand it to Freddie Couples at the age of 63, becoming the oldest player in Masters history to make the cut. His 31st cut, he's played 38 Masters. He shot a 171 on Thursday, a 2 over 74 in the second round. He's plus three through nine, plus four overall. And Freddie has just been unbelievable. And, you know, how ironic it is that the old guys, Freddie at 63, Tiger's 47 now, they make the cut. And the young guns, Rory McIlroy and Justin Thomas, they're all great friends. They do not make the cut, Rory and Justin Thomas. Well, another bizarre thing that happened here over the weekend, three tall pines fell near the 17th tee box. This happened on Friday, just before the horn was blown to suspend play for the second time on Friday. And miraculously, no one was hurt. But boy, was that scary. I mean, there were patrons out there. But apparently, one pine hit another, and they both went down very quickly. But, you know, people could hear maybe the sound, and it maybe alerted them to, you know, look up and react quickly. But boy, was that ever scary. And thank goodness nobody was hurt. Well, it's 43 degrees right now in Augusta. The forecast calls for lingering drizzle. It was windy and cold when I drove in this morning. Winds will be from the northeast 14 to 18 miles an hour with gusts up to 25 miles an hour. So, again, it will be tough conditions out there this morning and this afternoon. But, boy, Brooks Koepka is back. No matter how you feel about him, he has just been lighting up the leaderboard. He's healthy again for the first time in a long time. And the four-time major champion is on a mission. I saw him win the 2017 U.S. Open in Erin Hills. I saw him become only the third guy to successfully defend the U.S. Open title when he won at Shinnecock in 2018. Saw him at the PGA Championship in St. Louis in 2018. Won that. He repeated that title at Bethpage in 2019. We know how good Brooks Koepka is. And how he zones in at the majors and just kind of takes it up to an unbelievable level. And, you know, injuries really have derailed him the last couple years. He detailed his latest injury, which occurred in 2021. He said after the Phoenix Open, he said he slipped and fell in his house, dislocated his knee, attempted to snap his kneecap back into place. And he said that's when it shattered. It all sounds very odd, but you know, last year he couldn't even bend his knee. And he was talking about finding, you know, one of the top surgeons who did a new procedure on him. And it worked. And he worked very hard. He rehabbed with his team. And he said he started feeling 100% physically again in January. So, you know, he said when the knee was messed up, he was afraid to get back on it to load it on his right side. He said his swing became more of a stack and tilt. But he said it's now so much easier because he can load up on it again, get his full turn and rotation going. And man, is he looking just amazing. And, you know, it's amazing what a difference it makes when you're 100% healthy physically and firing on all cylinders. He reunited with swing coach Claude Harmon last year, and that certainly has also helped make a difference. But, you know, I think it's a shame he joined LIV, and I do believe he has his regrets. He mentioned how much he misses playing against Rory and Scottie Scheffler and Jon Rahm, and he loves the fact that these guys play their best, and he misses going toe-to-toe with them. And he said that's what makes these majors so cool. And he said when he was asked in the press conference if he had been as healthy as he is now, would the LIV decision have been more challenging? And Brooks said, honestly, yeah, if I'm being completely honest. So even though he got tons of cash to join LIV Golf, I do believe he regrets it. He's not competing against the best players in the world on the LIV circuit. And now that he's healthy, I think, you know, that's a huge omission for him not to be able to play with the top players in the world, you know, week after week. But I have to say, it's great to see his no-nonsense approach to the game. He's doing everything right. and he has only one bogey through 2.5 rounds, firing that 7-under 65 in the first round, 5-under 67 in the second. And, you know, he was lucky to get that second round in early before the bad weather arrived. So it should be an interesting morning to see these, you know, it's kind of like a, you know, a two-man horse race at this point. I don't see Koepka letting up, but I do see Jon Rahm continuing to power on. And it's kind of like two heavyweights going at it in the ring and slugging it out. So it should be very, very exciting. All right. Well, every year during Masters Week, you know, Augusta National brings in a variety of players to the media building for press conferences. And it's a really good opportunity to get a good feel for how each player is feeling coming into this first major, and you get a chance to ask a variety of questions, and you can really gain insight into what these guys are thinking. So I thought we'd put together a compilation with some of my questions and their answers throughout the week with some of the top players and legends in the game. You'll hear Tiger, Jordan Spieth, Jon Rahm, and then honorary starters Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, and Tom Watson.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan, Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66, WFAN and WFAN-FM, New York.
What has been the key to your overcoming adversity through the years, would you say?
Stubbornness.
You guys have seen me. I'm a little bit on the stubborn side, so I believe in hard work. You know, I believe in getting out there and, you know, getting out of what you put into it. And, you know, I've worked very hard throughout my career and in my craft. I've always loved it, and I've certainly had my share of adversities physically, and have had multiple surgeries, and I've had to come back and work through that. And you know, those were tough. They're never easy, but I think just the overall desire to win has always been there, and I've always worked at it and believed in what I could do, and have been stubborn and driven to come back and be able to play at a high level. And I think that has shown throughout my career. One of the reasons why I was able to, like I was telling Dee, how many cuts I've been able to make in a row, how many tournaments I've been able to win over the course of my career, and that's just hanging in there and fighting on each and every shot. It means something. Each and every shot means something.
Hi, Jordan. How you doing? So what have you learned the most about yourself in all your experiences here, the ups, the downs, in handling all that?
Well, I think I've learned that it's a game, and it's a game. And I've approached the highs and the lows as life or death at different scenarios, and it's just not the case. I'm 10 years in and have had a lot of different experiences here, and I can say that I look back, I learned a lot from winning, I learned a lot from losing. I feel better perspective now than ever, and hopefully that continues to grow. But ultimately, you know, our sport doesn't get heightened more than it does this week. There's not as much. This is the highest viewed, you know, golf tournament in the world, and you know, I like to always call it our Super Bowl. But at the same time, that's still a game too. So just thinking of it that way kind of brings everything in a little bit, and you know, allows you to kind of free up and look at each week as its own independent week. So this, I can't draw off of a shot I hit a certain time 5 years ago in this event, because it's a different shot, and I'm a different player. And I feel good about the form I'm in. Hopefully we get a firmer, faster Augusta. I like it that way. I've played better when it is that way. It doesn't look like it's going to be that way. But, you know, if it forces a lot more kind of wedges into the par fives and some angles because of the cooler temperatures and the moisture on the ground, then I can certainly look at that as advantageous to me, too. I mean, I'm just going to spin it positively however I can.
Hi, John. What are your thoughts on the lengthening of the 13th, and what might your strategy be there this week?
Well, you obviously don't really have a chance to turn the corner as much as people did in the past and have a short iron, right? I'm one of those. I've been able to hit an 8-iron there into the green, and obviously that's a huge advantage. It's funny you mentioning this. Obviously, I've seen a lot of videos of people hitting a tee shot and then having a long iron into that hole, talking about 4-irons, 2-irons, possible woods. So I think they just wanted it to play the way it's meant to be played, right? And it kind of gets to a point that 11 being at par 4, being longer than 13, it's a bit odd. I'm not opposed to it. I think you're going to see a lot more layups, obviously, right? If you don't really quite hug the left side, you're going to have such a long iron in that a lot of people will probably choose to lay up, but there's still going to be a risk, you know, maybe more so risk-reward aspect to it, because if you're able to hit the green and give yourself an eagle chance, it's going to matter a lot more than it did maybe in the past.
An honor to see all of you. Can you each pinpoint a key life lesson you learned throughout your years playing here at the Masters?
I think the prevalent thing in my career being at this wonderful tournament is gratitude. To be have the opportunity to play in a tournament of this stature and to meet people like President Eisenhower, you know, being from a country that practiced apartheid. Well, you did as well over here, but what he did for freedom, that was always a very big imprint on my life when you think what a marvelous role he played. And then meeting Bobby Jones here as well, such a wonderful golfer, gentleman, maybe the best player that ever lived. He played with a walking stick and a ball that went 80 yards less than today. No mowers. So I think the word is gratitude, just to be able to, particularly for me, this is my 65th appearance here. And you walk on the first tee and you say, well, this might be the last one. So I think gratitude is a word for me.
We'll go with what everything Gary said, and we'll get to a golf side of it. I first played here. I missed the cut the first year with 8 3-putt greens, and I was at 149. Arnold was at 141, and he had... And I hit 31 greens in regulation, and he hit 19. And I said, I think I better learn how to putt. And I learned how to putt these greens, and it worked. Outside of that, that's a pretty good life lesson to learn how to putt, because if I didn't learn how to putt, I wouldn't be sitting here. But it's, you know, to be here and be part of what's going on is pretty special, and we've just been very blessed to be part of it.
Well, I concur with what Gary said, gratitude. I say it a bunch of times, not very lightly. I say, how lucky am I to be able to play a game for a living? I mean, I wake up and I can't wait to go out to my job. And it's a game. Sometimes it got a little frustrating in years, but you'd be able to tee it up at Augusta as an amateur in 1970 and then again in 1975 playing with Jack. In the second to the last group when he made that. How long was that putt at 16?
42 feet, 3 inches.
I don't know. Approximately, right?
Approximately.
But to be able to play with and try to compete with my heroes, I had a chance to play with Arnold Palmer when I was 15 years old, again with Jack as an amateur when I was 17 years old, and then got paired with him in my first Masters in 1975. The dream was there, but just the ability to play a game for a living. You know, you all work for a living, right? I play a game for a living. It can't be any better than that.
Much fun to talk to these guys. The honorary starters at the last fours was Tom Watson, and one of my favorite moments is on the Thursday morning when the honorary starters, Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, and Tom Watson, walked to the first tee and just standing there and along with everybody else who goes up there under the big oak tree. It's just a very, very special, special time. Well, hey, during that montage that we played, we had a news flash, an announcement, and the announcement is this. Tiger Woods has officially withdrawn from the Masters. I was talking about him a little earlier. He did make the cut, a record 23 straight cuts, but yesterday he was at, plus six through seven holes, plus nine overall, and the cold, rainy weather just too much for his ailing body physically. So Tiger Woods has officially withdrawn. All right, we'll talk more about that as the morning develops here. Jerry Pate, a major winner who has been coming to the Masters since 1974. He won the U.S. Open back in 1976. He's going to join us in a few minutes. And then later on in the show, PGA Tour coach Sean Foley will join us. All that coming up. But first, let me tell you that many of the world's best golfers will tee it up at the Travelers Championship, June 22nd through the 25th. Rory McIlroy, Scottie Scheffler, Justin Thomas, 2022 champion Xander Schauffele, and many more. Next level competition, next level thrills, next level excitement, everything you expect from this world-class tournament and more. For tickets and info, visit TravelersChampionship.com and be sure to catch all the next level action.
Welcome to the CPAP Games live from the Hayes Bedroom. It's another eventful night, Bruce.
It sure is, Ron. Steve has been struggling with his CPAP.
His wife, Michelle, is trying to contain her rage.
Michelle throws an elbow.
She's leaving for the couch.
Steve should get Inspire.
Absolutely, Bruce. Inspire is a sleep apnea treatment that gives you comfortable, restful sleep with the click of a remote. There's no mask and no hose. Just sleep.
Learn more at InspireSleep.com.
Inspire is not for everyone. Talk to your doctor to see if it's right for you and review important safety information at InspireSleep.com.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talkin' Golf on this Easter Sunday. And, you know, one of my favorite days in sports is the Wednesday of Masters Week. It's the last practice day for the players. You have the par 3 competition. Everyone comes out under the big oak tree to visit, have lunch, and one of my favorite people in the golf biz, Jerry Pate, was there at Augusta National this past week with his family, and Jerry joins us now. Jerry Pate, 1976 U.S. Open winner of 15 titles, played in the Masters 7 times. Happy Easter, Jerry Pate. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ann. Thank you very much, and happy Easter to you.
Hey, before we get into some of your Masters memories, we have breaking news early this morning as Tiger Woods has officially withdrawn from the Masters. Boy, yesterday it was cold. It was rainy. He looked like he was struggling. He made the cut, a record 23 straight cuts, but when he started round three on the 10th yesterday, he bogeyed 10. 14, doubled 15, doubled 16, and he was at plus six through seven holes, plus nine overall. So I just think the cold weather was just too much for his ailing body. What are your thoughts, Jerry Pate?
Well, when I watch him walk, he looks like he's in a lot of pain, and he actually still has a very awkward gait to his walk. I don't even know how they put his foot and leg back together after that horrific car accident he had several years ago. So I know it's going to be very difficult for him to continue to be competitive.
Definitely. And he was saying in the press conference earlier in the week that, you know, he finds his joy in other areas now. He loves playing with his son. He loves passing his knowledge to other people and to his son. And so, you know, it's always great to see him, but it's hard to see him struggle like that physically.
Well, you know, comparatively in my career, I was 28 years old. I just almost won at Doral, won the Players, got beat a shot at Augusta, and was playing well in May, and I tore my shoulder, and that was basically the end of my career. I was 28 years old. I'd only played 7 years on tour, and I ended up having six shoulder surgeries, and it wasn't until my fourth surgery when I was 50, I was able to come back and play the Champions Tour and win a couple of times, and I had two more surgeries while I was playing the Champions Tour. So I can tell you, when your body's not there, you can just go home and enjoy time with your children and your family, which is really more important. And I had almost 20 years of that in between the Masters in 82. And ironically, you know, people always thought I played the Masters for years. I only played seven Masters. And although I finished a shot back to Stadler when he won in 82, that was the last time I played. It just, my shoulder was never right ever since that day.
But you've been coming every year for years, right, as a honoree, invitee. And so tell me, share some of your favorite memories of your times here.
Well, you know, you never forget your first round. Gary Player was the defending champ and historically the U.S. Amateur champion. I had won the U.S. Amateur in 74, and the U.S. Amateur champion gets paired with the defending Masters champ. And, of course, you saw that this year. When Sam Burns played with, I've drawn a blank, who won last year?
Sam Bennett.
Sam Bennett played in the top pairing. And, of course, I got paired with Gary Player. And, you know, it was pretty exciting to be paired with Gary Player. And so I'll never forget, you know, my first round at the Masters. And he was so kind. And to see Gary at 87 years old teeing off with Jack and Tom Watson, you know, there's a lot of great memories in going back all the way to 1975 for me to play with Mr. Player.
And isn't it fun to see how dedicated he is? He works the entire year for that tee shot. You're right. I mean, he had a good ball there on as an honorary tee shot, Gary Player. So it's I just love that morning and seeing these guys walk out and going to that first tee to officially start the Masters. It's a very special, special morning that Thursday. But I wanted to ask you about, you know, Brooks Koepka, because obviously you've had all these injuries, and Brooks is just looking unbelievable. And we forget, you know, he won those four major titles, and then he just has had to deal physically with these injuries the last couple of years, but he is operating on all cylinders now. My goodness. And, you know, he connected with that surgeon. I think you knew the surgeon that he was able to connect with who did the surgery, his latest surgery. And
yes,
Dr. Neil Elatache, is that his name?
Yep. Elatrosh. He was with the Job Curlin Clinic in L.A. In fact, Frank Job did my third surgery in 1987. Jim Andrews did my first two in 85, 86. I've known Jim since about 1978, believe it or not. We played the Pro-Am in Columbus, Georgia. He was with the Houston Clinic. Then he went on to his own career in Birmingham and at the Alabama Sports Medicine, and now Jim's in Pensacola. And I had a little bit to do with bringing him down here where I live at the Andrews Institute. But Neil was a disciple of Frank Job, and Frank was a great orthopedic surgeon that worked for the Dodgers and worked with a lot of the West Coast athletes. And Brooks ran into Neil. Neil's a good golfer. He plays at Bel Air Country Club. I haven't seen him in a few years, but he's quite the golfer, and he is really a great orthopedic surgeon. Obviously, Jim Andrews is the guy. I mean, Jim's done more athletes, famous athletes, than anybody in the world, and he's right here in Pensacola. But Brooks got with Neil, and he helped him with his knee injury, and that's just very typical. If you hurt a knee, a shoulder, an elbow, it's extremely hard to play golf. It's not like team sports where you can go play a few plays and go sit out for a week and then get rehabbed every day and come back in for a week, even though the hits are hard in professional football or hockey. You tear a rotator cuff in baseball, throwing the ball is tough for a pitcher. But when you're hurting golf, you know, there's no help, and you got to play every day for a week. The tournament lasts four straight days, and then people say, well, you know, why didn't you play for 6 weeks like Tiger? I mean, it's just incredibly strenuous to go out there and stand up for 5-6 hours and hit balls and be on the golf course like a guy has to do to win the Masters. It's an all-day affair. It's not, you know, people turn on the TV on Sunday and go, oh, I wish I could be a pro golfer. You know, they turn on at 4 o'clock and they see him play the last nine holes, say, boy, what a life, get to play golf. But they don't realize the work a guy puts into it, whether it's Tiger, Brooks Koepka, Phil Mickelson. You know, all these players work out and are in great shape, and the minute you have a little injury, it's dang near impossible to play.
Oh, absolutely. And it was also difficult to get a sense of how well Brooks has been playing this year, you know, because of the LIV. There were three LIV tourneys leading up to this one. He won the one in Orlando, but I don't get the sense that the competition and the level of play is quite there in these LIV tournaments. And so he comes here and voila, he's 100% healthy and he's playing lights out. Can he sustain that this, you know, today and in two rounds and through this weather and four shot lead over John Rahm when they started at 8:30 this morning? But what are your thoughts overall, Jerry, about Brooks Koepka's play?
Well, obviously John Rahm can really play, and you know, there's probably 10 people that can still win. You have 27 holes of golf left at the Masters, and you have a four-shot lead. Just in case when Stadler and I played in the last group in 82, Craig, I think, had about a 7 or 8 shot lead going to the back nine, and I had a putt on the last hole to tie him. So, you know, you start shooting 39, 40, which is – look what Tiger did on the back nine yesterday. You talked about it opening your show. You have a double bogey and another double bogey, and somebody goes birdie, birdie. I mean, Lord of mercy, you can pick up 6 shots in 2 holes because that's the way the course – it's a risk-reward golf course. And there's so much drama on the back nine at the Masters. There's no other golf course like it. It's one of those golf courses, if you play conservatively, you can get in trouble. You have to play aggressively, meaning you have to try to play the holes that you can birdie and play the holes you need to make par on. You have to play smart. But you start thinking about, well, don't do this and don't do that. When you're in the big lead, you're going to be in trouble. So it's a matter of focusing. You have to really get into yourself and focus to just play shot one shot at a time. You know, I listen to these telecasts, commentators talking early in the week about what the players do. You know, they're thinking about how they're going to play these holes and how the wind's going. They're not thinking about that. The only thing they're thinking about when they get out of bed is having breakfast, boom. Go to the golf course, stretch, boom. Hit a few putts, boom. Go to the range, warm up. They stay so focused in the moment. If you get ahead of yourself in golf, you're dead. You play one shot at a time, and you play that shot, and you leave the shot behind you. You don't dwell on the past. I don't care if you make birdie on the first hole. You don't go to the second hole and go, wow, birdie the first hole. Man, I'm going to shoot 64. You think about the tee shot on the second hole. If you ever get out of the moment in golf, you've had it. And I think that's the difference between the people that know how to win in golf and the people that look like they're pretty good players and they just never make it because they get all hung up in things that they can't control, which is the future. You can't control anything but that moment, and you can't dwell on the past.
And Brooks does that very well, staying in the moment. And, you know, but I think it's a shame, Jerry, he joined LIV. And I do think he has his regrets. You know, I just think it's too bad that he can't compete against the best in the game week in and week out. What are your thoughts about that, that a LIV golfer now is leading this Masters?
You know, I've always admired Greg Norman's career. I've always been a friend of Greg's. I think the fact that he was able to get someone to put that kind of money into golf is fantastic. I wish it would have been done a little differently. I think maybe he could have united the European tour to a strong tour and sort of a Middle Eastern Asian tour, all as one tour, and the PGA Tour. But let's not forget, every one of these players got to the point where they could get paid these monies because each time they teed off, I can go back to 1975 when I was an amateur in college. I played on the PGA Tour. And you have to sign an entry blank. And that entry blank says specifically, it's a contract. You will not play in a competing event. And so when you become a member of the PGA Tour and you play for 15, 20, 30 years and you earn a tremendous amount of money through your success and you agree to that, it's a bit disingenuous to say, okay, thank you so much, goodbye, bye. I'm going to jump over here and play on this other tour. And that's great. I think it's wonderful. People can make a living doing it another way. But it's disingenuous to say, well, I want to go over here and make this money that's guaranteed, but I want to double dip and play when I want to play on the PGA Tour. You can always play on the PGA Tour when you want to play when you're a member. You always can. You don't have to play any events. The only thing it disallows you if you don't play 15 events is you're not in the retirement plan, and you're not. It'd be like working part time in a business as a consultant. Then you can't be part of the 401k. And of course, in Tour they have a deferred comp plan, and it started from nothing. And I'm telling you, when I started in 1976 as a rookie, and listening to Sam Snead, who came before me, who had won 80 times. Sam Snead was winning $1,000 a week with no guaranteed appearances, no retirement. When I started in 76, I played some tournaments while I was in college, and then when I got out of school in 75, we were playing for $15 million total purse. I mean, the purse this week is $15 million, and then the last three or four events on the tour, the purse has been $20 million. So it's the people that laid down the opportunity by them being the show. And they created worth through the brilliance of Dean Beamon, Tim Fincham, now Jay Monahan. And they have to hold the line and say, look, we built this tour by people being connected with the tour and following the guidelines. Because if someone wants to jump in and out of the tour, the next tournament, the next week, doesn't get that player to play in that event. And so players have never been told you have to play in so many events, except if you want to have a right to vote on player directors. And don't forget, the players run the tour. Even though the commissioner is an employee of the player directors and the board run the tour. And it's been brilliantly set up by Dean Beamon. And before him was Joe Dye. I mean, Joe Dye was a USGA president and Augusta National member. He was the first commissioner. And I've known every one of these commissioners, and they've done a great job. But when you just want to jump out and say, somebody's going to offer me a lot of money, I think I'm not going to play in the Southern Open, the Texas Open, or the Pensacola Open back in my days, which were not, they were not as big as the Memorial or the Colonial or as big as Doral at Miami or Hilton Head or the Masters. You had to support the tour because it breaks down the ability of the organization to have events, to provide a place for people to earn a living. And what's so comical is for people to say, well, I can't play in a certain tournament. I'm not going to be afforded a living. I mean, these guys are all flying on private jets and, in worst case, making $3 or $4 million a year. I mean, they need to realize what normal people in America do. So I was always humble enough to appreciate what Dean Beamon brought to the table. And after Dean, in my time, Tim Fincham. Because, and I'll say again, it's great that somebody can go get someone to bring a lot of money to the game, but it should be done together with the PGA Tour. Or if you don't want to do it together with the PGA Tour, go play your own tour, go play the LIV Tour, but don't expect to be able to jump back on the PGA Tour at any moment because it's its own organization, and it has provided opportunity for years.
Wow, we need a whole show just on that one topic, Jerry. We're out of time, but thank you so much. Have a very happy Easter. Enjoy the Masters, and I look forward to talking to you down the road. Thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, coming up, we're going to say hello to Sean Foley, PGA Tour coach. He'll join us in a few minutes. But first, let me tell you that Travelers is always looking for ways to give our customers and communities more. And as the title sponsor of the Travelers Championship, we believe this year will be no different. Next level competition, next level thrills, next level excitement. Everything you expect from this world-class tournament and more. With many of the PGA Tour's best players, thousands of volunteers, and loyal fans, the Travelers Championship will be raising funds for nonprofits across the region. For tickets and information, visit TravelersChampionship.com. Next level action, June 22nd to the 25th.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Welcome back to Talkin' Golf on this Masters Sunday. Hope you're having a happy Easter so far. And joining me now is PGA Tour coach Sean Foley, who has worked with a lot of top golfers through the years, including Tiger Woods, Justin Rose. Sean is also seen prominently in the Netflix series Full Swing that's been out for a few months. Sean, welcome to Talking Golf.
Hi, good morning, Ann.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Well, news broke earlier in this show that due to injury, Tiger has officially withdrawn from the Masters, completing seven holes of the third round. I was watching him a little bit yesterday. He bogeyed 10, he bogeyed 14, he doubled 15 and 16. And it was actually the first time in his career here that he made back-to-back double bogeys. It was plus 6 through 7, plus 9 overall. Does the news surprise you at all, Sean?
No, I would say that golf did not look very fun yesterday, especially especially just from the standpoint of how cold it was and the amount of rain and then the walking. So I think it's incredible to see the effort that he's given. To walk around that golf course, if you're healthy, is one thing. To know that his leg has bothered him, you know, hats off to Tiger. He makes the tournament more special when he's here, and it's always good to see him play golf, especially on this golf course.
Yeah, obviously the cold, rainy weather just proving too much for his ailing body, and it's just, you know, just the walking, the physical walking on this golf course when it's nice is tough, and then, you know, add in the cold, rain, and oh my goodness, it just looked brutal out there. But so you worked with Tiger from September 2010 to June 14th, 2014. Talk a little bit about how you both connected and what that was like for you.
I met Tiger through Sean O'Hare, Justin Rose, and Hunter Mahan. So I had had a good stretch with those guys, and Tiger was looking for help, so he asked me to help him. And you know, it was a tremendous honor. But I don't think at that point that you realize how different it's going to be. You have to kind of go through it to get to it. So just the level of fame, criticism, fascinating times. So, I kind of walked into Tiger's life at a time when people were walking out. And, you know, to this day, we still have a good relationship.
And so what do you think was perhaps your biggest impact on him during the years you worked with him?
I think it is, like, you know, as it is for most of my players, it's just being there for them in a slightly different way, you know. Just it's really that. I mean, look, you're not, yes, we may be swing coaches, and if, you know, my mom comes for a lesson, I'm instructing her in what to do, but you're not really instructing Justin Rose on how to play golf or swing a golf club. So I think that, you know, golf gets confusing because the way you feel changes so often. And I think coaches, basically, we kind of have a game plan of what it is that we want to improve at. You can use data to look at, you know, where the shortcomings are in people's games and come up with a plan to see if you can, you know, gain half a stroke more around the greens or on the greens. You know, sometimes players will be wanting to change equipment, just kind of being the voice of reference of why are we doing this? Just challenging them, I think, and then making sure they kind of stay, you know, it's not a direct path, but kind of stay around the plan enough.
Right. And when you were working with him, like, how severe was his back at that point with the injuries? Because he had so many of those back fusions and surgeries before, you know, he went to even a different level of injuries with the car accident in 2021 of February.
Yeah, I mean, look, Tiger, to become as good as Tiger or Annika or Federer or Serena, you just really have to do a lot of reps. And the problem with high-level sports is overuse to tissue. And, you know, I think what happens, what we've learned now, is that, you know, athletes previously were coming back too soon. And so, yes, the surgery was done and they felt better, but the rehab wasn't done enough yet. So I think to anyone out there who get the surgery done, whether it's their knee or their back, you know, once they tell you you're good to go, you should probably add 6 more months of rehab.
And I think Brooks Koepka ran into the same problem. The doctors told him about
tough,
a year
right?
and a half of you know, that it would take, and he went back prematurely, right?
But that's the thing, you know, they're playing for these massive titles. They have sponsorship deals. They know they're playing good. There's plenty of money on the line. And they are who they are because they think they can overcome anything.
And, you know, that's normally a good thing, but when it comes down, it's very important that the team around you are knowledgeable and have education. And I know that the people that surrounded Brooks were all fantastic. They're all professionals, but at the end of the day, the player is the player, and he obviously learned from it.
What are your thoughts on Brooks? I mean, this guy looks like a machine out there, Sean. He's on a mission. Yeah. You know, he reunited with Claude Harmon. That's paying off. And, you know, he's, as I mentioned, he's healthy for the first time in years. He's, you know, where he can actually make that full rotation without pain.
Yeah. I mean, look, he's looked incredible this week. It's not easy to make Augusta look like it's a walk in the park, and he really did that for the first two rounds, and then I think went out in the rain and played beautifully. The one thing we know is Brooks is not going to make excuses. He's not going to blame it on anything but himself. He's a real champion that way. His level of ownership and responsibility is unique. Reminds me of Tiger that way, or DJ. And I think with those three, you know, they kind of just move from shot to shot better than most people. He's not going to spend a lot of time. I think Brooks forgives himself quickly, and I think he also knows that the game is difficult. And, you know, he's playing today. He's playing with house money. The thing is, with the temperature and the wind, those Sunday back nine 29s and 30s and 31s, they're just not going to happen. So to be that many strokes ahead is basically playing a chess match now with John Rahm. Everyone else is quite a bit back there. So I don't see anyone shooting 7 under par. But that being said, anything can happen. Once it starts raining like that, you get water on the ball, you get water on the club face, and strange things can happen. And as we know at Augusta, into the green, like hitting a terrible shot is always going to end up in a bogey. We're still going to have to wait till this evening to see who wins, but I would feel like Brooks is in a good place with his game. Even more so, he's feeling good. You know, I don't know how many of the listeners out there have had knee issues or foot issues, but I've had both. And when you don't feel those, I think everything else just gets better, because as you improve, everything around you improves. Because when you're going through the pain and you can't really do what you once did, it's as mentally challenging as it is physically. So I just see a guy rejuvenated with being physically able to do what he knows he can do, and being grateful for the opportunity that, if you watch Full Swing, you know, Brooks could have convinced himself that it was over there. So
exactly. I know you played a major role in that first season of Full Swing. I understand they're filming a season two, but Brooks, when you watch that episode, he was depressed. He looked like he was just on the edge, you know, about to, you know, jump off the deep end. And now it's a whole different thing. So
that's the beauty of reality, right? Is it's not permanent. And so it's truth may be permanent, but obviously reality is not. So what is real today is not real tomorrow. And I think that if we caught almost anybody on the wrong day, everyone could sound like that. And then a week later, we could catch them on the right day and be like, man, is this person two people? And I think to some extent, we all are, based on whatever mood we're in.
Well, you probably hear more about your appearance in Full Swing than probably anything else, right? I mean, it's been such a popular hit. What was that like, being in that first series of Full Swing?
Yeah, no, it's cool. As time goes on, I'm kind of branching out. I've been out on the PGA Tour for almost 18 years. And it's just something interesting to be able to do. I have a lot of insider info on these players and the teams around them. I've watched them all come out, or I grew up out here with them. I'm just kind of extending my tentacles in different directions and seeing what I enjoy.
And I know you have a new training aid out, Sean, the Pro Sender. Quickly, tell me about that.
Yeah, the Pro Sender, and Sender is S-E-N-D-R, goes on the right wrist, and it's a training aid that helps the golfer, right-handed golfer, we have a lefty version coming out in June, get the club in a much stronger, better position at the top of the backswing, and so from there they can go ahead and release it into impact. So that's at I'm at Sean Foley Performance on Instagram, and we're at Pro Center Golf as well. So it's been, we have 21 players on tour using it currently, and we've done a lot in sales, and we're getting a lot of great feedback. I think we sold 6,000. I think we have 7 refunds, so we're feeling pretty good about what we're seeing.
Sean, thank you so much. We're out of time, but let's do it again. I really appreciate
All right, thanks,
it.
Ann.
My thanks to Sean Foley, to Jerry Pate, to EJ Stewart in the studio. Talking Golf is brought to you by Travelers. It's better under the umbrella. Happy Easter. Stay tuned for Rick Wolf and the Sports Edge. Enjoy the Masters. Brooks Koepka with that 4-shot lead. We'll talk to you next Sunday morning right here on Talking Golf with Ann Liguori.